equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at hour two. Wednesday at the Races, Sirius XM, coming to you from Pimlico, Ohio, and Sid Fernando standing by, and Sid's been bopping back and forth from New York to Florida. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good.
All right. You back in Florida?
Yeah, I'm in Tampa.
Nice. Well, I don't know if you were listening to the lead up, but before we dive into a tortured week, let's get some personal news because people are very curious. There actually were some Twitter inquiries last week after your visit about Joe.
Yeah, thank you. I did listen to the show from the beginning. Alan Foreman was excellent. Really explained it, and I appreciate your lead into to my news. I actually, I'm not on Twitter anymore, so I've had a group of people that have been following my son Joe's baseball career. It's one of the things I miss about Twitter because, there's like a core group of people that have really given us a lot of support and just been, enjoyed watching the videos and whatnot that I posted through his college years, high school years. And even earlier, to tell you the truth, 10 years of doing that. But the great news is that, a lot of people who were following me knew that he had been signed by the Padres last year. But he went to, just like everybody else, went to spring training last year for a week. And COVID canceled spring training, so he'd been signed for 2020, and they canceled the minor league season. And in June, once the minor league season was officially canceled, he got released, as did a lot of other guys. And then to make matters worse, Steve, for 2021, MLB eliminated 42 minor league teams, squeezing more guys out of the picture. So to come to the present, I'd come down to Florida in March to work out with him. And the good news from last Thursday was that the Braves called. And to bring it live, the Braves called, tell them we want him report right away. He had to go into quarantine for 5 days, take a COVID test. He passed that. He just got out of quarantine today. He's taking his physical as we speak right now. And officially, once he passes the physical, he'll sign his contract and he'll get on the field. He'll have to do his spring training because he didn't go to spring training from April to May, so he's going to have to join some of these guys that were left in extended spring training and get his reps in, his at bats and so forth. But that's the great news. He's an Atlanta Brave.
Congratulations to Joe, to you and CC, and you know, he's worked so hard and has been just so focused on making it happen. And the bizarre decision by by baseball collectively to lob off four dozen minor league teams to create this oddity, this new minor leagues that they've crafted, just to me seems idiotic, but it just seemed to Sid like it was going to be much more difficult to make a roster to latch on somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. It was so difficult. It was tough enough last year getting released when the season was canceled, but then to come back, and cut, as you say, these teams out, it just reduced the opportunities, right? So, I posted on my Instagram account. I mean, it was, I said 150 to one shot to get in, but we're training like we're 2 to 1. In other words, we were still going hard training. But he and I kind of felt like, geez, we're coming to the end of the road. Fortunately, last week, it had come that the Mets were trying to get him to come out for a workout, but he didn't get his second COVID shot till last Friday. And because of that, the Mets couldn't get him to come out last week. And they were going to schedule it for this week, but fortunately, on the Thursday, before that Friday, before he got his second COVID shot, that's when the Braves called to get out here. And so, we just took it right away.
Hmm.
And, like I said, you got to get in the game to have a shot. So he's got a shot now.
Outstanding. And he's how old?
He's just turned 24. So, all these guys are a year older because they missed last year.
Right.
He would have been his normal age, 23, last year if he'd been in the system. But, the thing is, everybody has to add a year onto themselves now because of the lost season last year, So,
well,
we'll see what happens. But, he's pumped, and I expect to hear from him today. Like I said, telling me that, he's on the field now.
Well, there's a couple of options, and some are more some might be a little more appealing than others. But of course, they're Braves down in Northport. There is
he's at Northport right now.
Yeah, the opportunity high A, I guess Rome, Georgia, and then the lower A is in South Carolina, North Augusta,
yeah.
South Carolina.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, I'll probably at some point when I hear, I'll let you guys know, and I'll probably drive over there on my way back to New York. But, honestly, it's probably the best week I've had in a decade.
Well, very excited for him, and I as somebody who plays, I've been in a fantasy league, Mid-Atlantic Rotisserie League. We started in 1985, and I, somebody who we get to roster minor leaguers, and it's very notable, Sid. One thing that's happened is that guys are getting shots. At much later, it's actually pretty interesting. I don't know if it's because rosters are filled with guys that are older and are having longer careers, but the amount of players that are being called up for the first time and starting their major league service at 25, 26, 27 is eye popping.
Yeah, and that's going to even get pushed back now with this lost year, too.
Because, yeah.
Like I said, everybody got a year older,
Well, There's some interesting places that he might be spending time in Pearl, Mississippi, outside of Jackson too. So
I'd love that. Yeah.
There's the Mississippi Braves. Well, people were really excited and anxious to hear. So
appreciate that support.
No, we're thrilled.
Like
just thrilled for
people asking.
Well, and I guess the only thing, the Mets fans out there, which there's plenty of, they would have loved to have followed him and seen him in blue and orange, but that's all right. And also you mentioned your absence from the social media landscape. Got a note. Mike Bacik said, "Tell Sid we miss him, especially in times like these."
Nice.
Well, and speaking of times like these, let's transition. Sid, your read on this just haunting and tawdry and humiliating and just ridiculous set of circumstances.
I think you pretty much hit it on the nail. I mean, it's devastating, as everybody has stated. I mean, you know, I've seen people, all the commentary on social media, because I can actually read the comments to our company account. So I go in and I see what people have been talking about. I mean, they have every right to, it's just like fans in baseball, man, that's part of the thing. You have to, the social media chorus kind of equates to, fans yelling at guys and going after people. And that's to be expected. You get something like this in the biggest event. And, as everybody, said, it's just sickening and it's devastating. From my own personal perspective, I've been following the game since the 70s. And this is just, for me, I went to good schools. I graduated from Vassar College with an art history degree. And I told my mom, after she'd invested all that in my education, that I was going to go into the racing business. And this was when I graduated in 82, and she was just so upset. And she was upset because racing has a certain connotation, And that's true. I mean, I've always known about the fact that, the game, no matter how much you dress it up, and some people might not like this for a day, but it's not a zero-sum game. It's a negative-sum game. And it's like Alan Foreman said to you earlier, this stuff doesn't go away, And people know. And it's just, it's things happen like this, and it's just another part of a negative number. And the thing is, it's nice that everybody wants to clean up the game and do that. But I've been observing for 50 years of, watching this game. I'm the same age you are. I'm 61. And I've been a rabid racing fan since I was, 11, 12. It's part, it's unfortunate, but that's in my, like I said, from my own personal opinion, none of this stuff surprises me, because from the beginning of time racing, people are always looking for an edge. People are always doing stuff. People want zero tolerance levels on no breakdowns. They want zero tolerance levels and no positives. The industry itself has made itself a negative sum game even more, because they put everything into an impossible situation. And, Obviously, nobody wants cheating. Nobody wants positive tests. Nobody wants horses to break down. But really, the biggest change that I've seen, Steve, in 50 years is just the perception of, changes in perception to animal welfare. That alone has become the major thing I've seen in my lifetime where people will not accept anything like this anymore. When I was coming up, racing and horses were considered more livestock. And, people eat meat. People don't have these issues about, cows being slaughtered. And there was a similar thing with horses. It was just an accepted thing that we're obviously producing so many horses and what happens to them, right? Well, the outrage now around Baffert is extremely warranted. There's a greater outrages out there, and one of them is, quote-unquote, wastage, horse wastage. Wait till that catches up to us down the line and catches up to the whole thing. So, for me, I love the game, don't get me wrong. I went into it even when, my mom told me you're going into a tainted business. I love it. To this day, I love it. I love racing. I love everything about it. But I'm aware of stuff that happens, and more so than I think a lot of people, because I'm actively involved in this game. And, people are constantly going to look for an edge. It's just going to, take this Lasix thing, for example. Once you can't use Lasix, people are now looking for other things to use, right, to counteract the bleeding. And so there are all sorts of other things, from Chinese herbs to stuff like Dembrexin, which goes by the trade name Spidolysin. It's a nasal decongestant. All of this stuff is going to start testing in the coming years, and, we're not getting away from it. In fact, it's going to just increase even more. So my take on this is, get used to it and try to clean up the sport. And it's all the power to all these people that, wish that it can happen. And let's see what can happen. But these are devastating things to the game, and it's not easy to recover. And that's why I call it a negative-sum game. That's my rant.
No, it's not a rant at all. Very reasoned and rational. And I just Eric Hamelbeck just sent me a note. The degree of separation I've discussed this and tried to stress this forever, as long as I've been doing this, and that is the separation of society from, from farm life, from agrarian life. There's also been recent. A lot of recent writing about the pet industry and the transition in the last generation or two of, in particular with the dog, with the family dog, from living in the doghouse outside.
Yeah.
To being in the house and being a family member, that's treated in a different manner than we see from working dogs. I was out at Country Life this week, and I think I saw at least five dogs, and the Jack Russell had grabbed himself herself a mouse. The role of a farm dog and farm cats, very different than the one that we enjoy. But that's a corollary to people not understanding a professional working relationship with with a sport animal, in this case. And that is the most glaring portion of the, I think, the mainstream, quote unquote, reaction to, you know, to what transpired.
Yeah, and it's not just this incident. It could be a breakdown. It could be a whip use. You know, it's just.
Yeah.
And you know what? This perception, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a good thing. That's why, for me, it just seems like, you know, it's a losing proposition, because the fact that people are racing horses is an affront to other people to begin with. And then you add the drugs into it, you add the breakdowns, you add the whipping, you know, you add everything that people are talking about, and which, not to lighten any of this stuff, but, you know, all that stuff, like I said, if I go back to 50 years ago or 40 years or 30, you know, people accepted that more than they do now. And so, you know, they're younger fans that have come in and they've been in this game 5, 10 years or whatever. They're in their mid-30s or whatever. It's a different perception they have. You know, it's an affront to them about drug usage, because they've grown up in an era with, you know, ELISA testing and the chromatography and mass spectrometry that's right now in effect. You know, back then, you know, guys were using all sorts of stuff. It was just part of how it was. Now, you know, even, you know, therapeutic stuff comes up, not to mention, you know, designer stuff that, you know, could come up or has in some cases, cobalt, which was being tested for. And like I said, this idea that the LASIX, I know for a fact guys are searching for alternatives that bettors have no idea about. You know, bettors knew about LASIX, fine. Now, you know, owners, breeders, bettors, horses, competitors, you know, they're trying to one up each other on the inside knowledge that they get. You know, I don't. It's just something that I've been aware of. Now, real quickly, Steve, I mean, with this SGF 1000, for example, obviously, service has become the poster boy for that. But I knew guys, lots of big-time trainers in New York that were using the same thing. It's sheep collagen, and people found it as a great recovery, right? Naira knew people were using it, because when the word was coming down that service was going to get busted, Naira very conveniently put it down on an overnight in September. Oh, by the way, SGF 1000 will no longer be tolerated. It's no longer illegal, or it is illegal to use, or whatever the language was, on the overnight. Tacitly, they knew everybody there was using it, too. And like I said, I've talked to trainers off the record that I can't obviously reveal their names, who are using the stuff. Everybody, once they find something, other guys get onto it, and everybody, you know, is looking for something, essentially, from helping a horse to enhancing a horse. And so, you know, even in beta-methasone, by the way, if you recall, it was in 2014 or 2015, Todd Pletcher got flagged for it in Delaware with Princes of Sylmar, right?
Yeah.
So they had the first test. The split sample came back confirming the horse tested positive for beta-methasone. You know what happened? The case went to trial or to a hearing, and the AG, the deputy AG in Delaware, looked at the evidence and said, we can't prosecute this thing. And the reason for that was there wasn't enough literature on beta-methasone that was published to argue the case in court. And therefore, even though there was a positive and a split sample confirmation, the case was dismissed. Now, I bring that point up because to tag along with what Alan Forman said, the ruling on betamethasone as it is in Kentucky and elsewhere and RCI is that it's based on a 14-day withdrawal based on 9 milligrams intra-articular. That's the science. It's based on a joint tap with 9 milligrams 14 days out, and that's considered the withdrawal time, and that's the science. There isn't any published science on, quote-unquote, a topical application to it. That it's present in the system is grounds for DQ, no question about it. However, I can just see this court case going forward where the lawyers argue the science is for the intra-articular and not for a topical application. And so this is how, you know, it's just the way the laws are, and that's how people argue stuff. And, you know, I think down the road, if this thing does get confirmed in a split sample, there's a DQ and it goes to court. I think that's going to be one of the big arguments. As you know, I'm a follower of legal stuff, and you know that's my interpretation on it based on the precedent of the Todd Pletcher case.
Right. And on that note, Sid, you know, and aside from the. The lawsuit, the now two lawsuits facing HISA. Let's say it goes ahead. Do you? I mean, if you listen to Alan and Alan, you know, Alan after a long period of I won't say standing against a government program, a government set of policies from government directed. I've asked him and Mary Scalay in the last 2 days what the, and actually Matt Hegarty weighed in too. What pieces, how their role in this could improve the landscape, and I guess the obvious easy answer is just is some uniformity that came up with Alan. But I mean, do you foresee that there's a clear path forward with that mechanism?
Well, I think uniformity is paramount. I agree with that. You know, I agree with a lot of the general principles of you want uniformity. You want a central body, if you can, if it's legal to do. There's a lot of good stuff, but what I argued before in the sense of the legal aspects is the formation of this thing by what looks like very, very delicate underpinnings that could be challenged in court. We've gone over that on here before, based on 10th Amendment issues and how they structure the HISA by basically commanding states to relinquish their jurisdiction over this while at the same time asking them to pay for it. So that's a separate issue altogether. Uniformity is a great thing. It's something that's lacking, you know. Say, as he pointed out, this level of betamethasone was permitted in California, and it's not in Kentucky. Yeah, that's ridiculous for people to kind of moderate on their own. In Baffert's case, you know what's really puzzling and what you've been berating him about, and it's very much so, is that he said he was going to run a tighter ship, and he hired a Kentucky veterinarian through the Avengers, that group, the buying group for him, SF Bloodstock, Madigan, Starlight, Renato, Annie. Well, one of the members is Dr. Hoare, Michael Hoare, of Rude and Riddle, who was then going to be his veterinarian, right? Well, that veterinarian is based in Kentucky, and he's supposed to be going over all the medication protocols and Plaster's Barn and all that stuff. We haven't heard anything from him. Somebody should, talk to him and find out if he was the guy that's, supervising everything and making sure the ship's tight. He's based in Kentucky. If they didn't know about these potential overages in California, if that's the case, certainly the guy in Kentucky would. But then again, we're assuming that Auto Max I don't like to get ahead of myself. I'd like to see what the split sample says and then go forward. I mean, Barry Irwin wrote a piece pretty much saying, with an intra-articular shot, he doesn't know. The science shows everything is based on an intra-articular shot that would lead to this type of thing. But, it's such poor taste for a guy like him who's a rival owner to speculate on what the guy did or not. The fact is the guy tested positive. That's bad. How he did it, who knows? But the fact of the matter is, if the split sample comes back and it's positive, he's going to get disqualified, and he should. That's just how the rules are. I mean, I follow the legal landscape, and I'm a believer in the rules. And so, if your rules aren't correct, then that's a problem. But if you have hard and fast rules, and there's no exemptions, and it falls into the parameters of guilt. There, you've got to be disqualified. And in this particular case, it looks. Again, I don't want to speculate because it's not going to be official until the split sample comes in. But if it does, it looks like it's a slam dunk DQ, like Alan Foreman said. And then I just gave you the potential argument they can make in trying to fight it, which is the basis of a betamethasone study for a positive is based on an intra-articular. And if they can prove that there was no intra-articular and there's no signs for a topical, I'm just giving you what, I'm not giving you my impression, I'm just giving you the impression of how they could possibly fight it. But the net effect, Steve, is, as I started off, negative sum.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the take and as always, thoughtful response. And there's other things clearly said to weave into this. And you're a good. You're actually I as much as I want to launch into a couple of. A couple of pedigree issues and thoughts on this Preakness field. I do want to follow up with a portion of the aftermath, and that includes, the obvious fissure in his relationship with Spendthrift, which had, really been thriving. The My Racehorse team. My Racehorse team as well, and I'm not, we'll see who else from an ownership standpoint makes a move, and then there's the reaction from others, from, you mentioned rival owners, Daisy Phipps saying she doesn't want her horses competing in the same settings. Mm-hmm. Citing an unfair, unlevel playing field, as it were. And, there's the horse player effect. Horse players are disgusted and they've been simmering and seething about these kinds of issues for, you know, for an extended period. This is not a, this is not new. It's just the latest and you know, and the biggest. And that, you know, I know people are, some people are focusing on the you know, how the mainstream reacts. I, you know, I think our focus, given you know, the majority of the audience, is industry tied players and stakeholders and operators and so forth. So I'm just curious about, you know, your read and thoughts on how, you know, an operation like Spendthrift is dealing with this and you know, the, you know, the, concentric circles.
Yeah, the Spendthrift thing is interesting because B. Wayne Hughes, you know, he's had his success in California, really Dick Mandela, you know, the big mayor, Beholder, with there. The way he landed with Baffert really is because he bought this colt, the racing rights to this colt, and the breeding rights from the Avengers group, SF Bloodstock, et al. And they, of course, train with Bob Baffert. So when he bought the horse and they bought into him, they kept him with the same trainer and ended up winning the Derby, a lifetime goal for B. Wayne Hughes, who's aging. And it was a, it was a, it was a great thing for B. Wayne Hughes and Spendthrift to get a Derby winner by their own sire Into Mischief to stand at stud, and Bob Baffert delivered the horse. And couple of ironies from this. So one of the things is they sent some other horses to Bob. You know, we can see that they only had four horses with Bob. One of them, that unhappy colt following C, who was taken away, and three others in partnership with MyRacehorse.com, and they were transferred to Mandela. But the irony about this thing is that if the DQ takes place, it ends up benefiting Spendthrift in a roundabout way, because the runner-up Mandaloon is by Into Mischief, and it gives Into Mischief back-to-back Derby winners. So there's just so many things involved in this thing, you know. What a incredible achievement that is for Into Mischief to come up with two colts that will be officially credited with Derby wins, you know what I'm saying? As far as owners, you know, Daisy Phipps, you know, they have every right to say that, you know, and they're, and why not, you know? You know, the fact is that, you know, Bob Baffert has a lot of enemies and frenemies, you know. He's a lightning rod, you know, like you said, with the baseball fan illusion. That's what takes place on social media. Everyone and his mother and her uncle's father have commented on Bob Baffert. And there are several people that have taken it, you know, in an amusing way and not so amusing way, to incredible levels. I mean, it's been on social media a way for people to express themselves, and they have just absolutely lambasted the guy. You know, it's their right to do it, and it's their disgust that they feel, and they've just gone out to the point where, you know, pardon the phrase, but it's a bunch of guys, you know, it's a bunch of these guys one-upping the other on who can say the, something, you know, even worse about it. But that's a, that's just showing us the feelings that people have on this thing, right? It just shows these are people that actually on social media that are commenting that are, you know, race fans or betters or whatnot. And it's almost, from the take I got, it's like 98.5% negative, you know. And that's the barometer of what we're talking about. You know, racing's a negative-sum game, and racing handle, too, isn't it? it's not the racing handle that funds purses anymore. It's got the racino, slot welfare, whatnot. So in that sense, it's not taking care of its own business that way. It's a negative-sum game in the PR department as well, isn't it? And these are just the people that already know it. How about all the people that are reading about it in general mainstream newspapers and stuff, right? You know, people calling me up too. Man, what a game you're in. I mean, you know, drugs and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And what I tell people is, yeah, man, I've known that for 50 years. I don't defend it. In my opinion, I'm not trying. I said, you know, that's just how it is in this game. And this won't be this isn't the first, and it's not going to be the last. And, you know, we've got some people trying to clean it up, and, you know, all the power to them, but, you know, try to clean up 150 years worth of history. As long as you got horses and they're running against each other, there's always going to be guys trying to one up the other. They're always going to be trying to find something. And, you know, sure, try to make it seem like you're doing a great job. Fine. Having said all that, I love the game.
Right. Right. And I think that's, in fact, you and I have touched on this in other arenas, noting, and actually I've had this conversation too with Andy Serling and Tony Black. Any game, any function in life and society that involves the opportunity to earn money or to win money is going to be subject to activities that skirt the parameters, and that's true on Wall Street as well.
Yeah.
And in the casinos.
No doubt.
Yeah. So it's hard to frame it in a way that I think that I think people who love the game will understand more than the people that are outside, looking askew at what goes on. But part of the game's charm is the shadows. And I'm not, like you just said, I don't think I'm saying something that is difficult to comprehend. In fact, that part of the game, is frequently celebrated in song and story. That's just a reality.
It's just part of the thing, and I'm not taking anything away. I'm not trying to absolve what these guys have done. No, not at all. But I'm just saying that, you know, I'm just not somebody who was born yesterday and thinks that this game's going to get cleaned up and, you know, all the best to them. Because I've seen it for 50 years live, and in honesty, guys back then, if you use these same tests on horses back then, you know, every major trainer would get baked, bro. I mean, there's an article in Sports Illustrated I frequently used on Twitter when I used to be on there about Conquistador Cielo. Before the Travers, and the article itself in detail, if you go back and Google his article, Woody Stevens, Conquistador Cielo, Travers, and find it, it details how Woody is tapping Conquistador Cielo's joints right before the Travers to get one last race into him because he's been syndicated for $36 million. And everybody is aware of it, you know?
Mm.
So, my case is different from the 28-year-old right now who doesn't know about that and thinks this is an affront, and it is an affront. Don't get me wrong. But my experience is based on my own personal experience, like yours is based on seeing this stuff through the years. And I'm not trying to minimize Baffert or anybody else right now. When it comes down to it, a law is a law. It doesn't matter if you're using say Navarro is accused of using some of this really terrible stuff, or whether it's a Lasix overage, the penalty, whatever that penalty is in the book, should apply to you. So I'm not trying to minimize anything, but I'm just trying to explain to people that if you come from someone, you know, with a background, like, say, on our age group, I mean, we just keep seeing this over and over again, you know?
Yeah. Well, we're gonna visit with Leon, with Leon Blushewicz in a little bit. And, boy, between Blue and Tony, we got, let's say, 150 years of, and then fold in you, 200 years worth of observation and experience.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, to take everything, some of the stuff out of the negative, I have to say this, and Steve, I want you to tweet it when it gets published. But Francis Caron, who's the bloodstock editor of our company blog, works at WTC Blog, she's written an incredible story. It's called A Postcard from the Derby. And this is the antidote to all the negativity we're hearing, okay? It's a gorgeous, true story, and it's either up there now or it's going to be up today. She's putting it up. Just such a really great story about, an uplifting racing story. And that's a perfect antidote. It's one of the reasons why, you know, people fall in love with the game and the people that are involved in it too. So I don't want to seem like I'm on a negative rant about the game.
Not at
all. End it by telling you about this story and having you retweet it later when it comes out. Okay.
My pleasure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Great.
Especially now that I sat 6 feet away from Francis at Derby.
Yeah. That's right.
I've seen her, and it's funny because I had seen her many times. I realized when I saw her in Louisville that I'd seen her many times, and we'd never really had a chance to talk to each other. She does great work. She's a lot like, and you talk about uplifting. I don't know how much of yesterday you heard, but I went out Monday after the show, went out to Country Life Farm, and going to do some things with Josh
and the basketball.
Yeah. Well, not me. I was gathering the misses and feeding Trombetta, who was draining them from all over the court. Josh Pons has that same, historic interest. And I mean, everything out there is actually steeped in the history of the game, with his grandfather and the formation of the farm. And it, the things that he has written between Maryland and the Country Life Diary, and it has that same sort of twilight glimmer, sepia tone, appreciation for the game.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be offended by what I said, but that's life, bro.
No. Nobody should be offended. Everybody, at least from our standpoint, I saw that Adam Wachtel had a letter to the editor at TDN this morning. I read that, and it was well penned. And, the commonality, which has been reiterated all, these last couple of days, has been that, everyone's should have a love for the game and want what's best, what's the most disappointing, in a manner respectful and with appreciation with what has come before and what ideally is the future. So that's to try to drive that point home these 3 days. Sid, let's come full circle and maybe get a thought or two in on this field. Aside from the backdrop and the elements that have that are going to dog it no matter what, it came up a modest running of this race really, and you know we've got a few horses that have made appearances along the way toward the classic season, and then you know the more familiar names and faces. What's your thought about some of these and what we'll see on Saturday?
It's hard for me to be impartial about this because of course we did the Mating of Concert
sure.
Tour. Was really disappointed in his race in the Arkansas Derby. And, you know, he's a light-bodied colt, kind of looks like he's fine-boned, looks immature. He's got a ton of talent. Bob Baffert had told me some months back when I was asking, because we'd also done Life is Good, too, and so I was curious as to how he had ranked Concert Tour. And back then he told me, there's not much separating the two of them in his mind. And so if that colt does come back to the Rebel and the feeling that Bob had about him, I think he, wins this race pretty easily. But then again, don't go by what I say because I'm extremely biased about him for the involvement in him. Risk-taking is a beautifully bred colt. As you mentioned in pedigree earlier, but Medaglia d'Oro out of a Distorted Humor mare, what a great nick that is. That's one of the great nicks, right? Songbird. I mean, they're all, that great cross. On top of that, he's just got such a huge pedigree behind him. Can't believe he was only a $240,000 yearling. But this is a massive family. It's a fifth family going back. Obviously, Seeking the Gold is under the fourth dam, who is Con Gain, and even closer up, the second dam has produced three stakes winners. The third dam, Tricky Game, produced King Cougat. It's a beautiful pedigree. It's a great cross. Probably has the best pedigree in the field. And then you got the Derby winner, that is just dead game. We talked about it. The race really is going to shape up as to how Concert Tour and that horse run. Concert Tour is best when he gets the lead, and that colt is tough to pass when he gets the lead. But I think Concert Tour's got more natural speed. Got that outside post, and I think Money Mike's going to just send him. So it's going to be an interesting race, and I think probably those three horses will probably be your main contenders, depending on if the two Baffert horses kill each other off or not.
Well, and that looking through the. Through PPs, it is notable, I suppose. Midnight Bourbon, who gets IRAD, who isn't exactly a forward going type. His tendency is to settle and come with a run, and that was everybody's disappointment that backed Midnight Bourbon in Derby, the more you watch it, the more you realize, Mike Smith might not have really had much of a choice, given the way Midnight Bourbon left when the gates opened. He wasn't keeping up with the speed that he showed in New Orleans. That wasn't going to, you know, clearly not enough, wasn't going to be enough to keep up with the, you know, the early lick in Derby. But honestly, Sid, there, and I haven't looked yet at pace graphing from either Time Form or from Thoroughgraph. The Thoroughgraphs will be out tonight. I'm interested to see that opening quarter charting that Jerry Brown does. But yeah, I mean, the only real speeds are Concertor and Medina.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the same barn, and Concertor showed last time that he just can't be rated, you know.
So he's going to let loose, and you know, I'll tell you the other thing, that other than that debut win by Medina Spirit, his PPs speak of the same thing. You know, his wins, his two stake wins, are, you know, when he's got his head and he's got the lead. So you got two horses that have only won. Well, you know, I guess in the San Vicente concert tour, you know, I guess, but he was out in the clear there too. So as far as he knew, you know, maybe he was out of eyeshot.
Yeah, but that race, even though he won it, was considered a subpar performance for him, you know? And Bob was experimenting at that time with seeing if he could get come from off the pace, because he didn't want him and Lightning Good running the same way.
Well, risk-taking with Jose Ortiz. I made the note when I went through the field at the opening of the show that it's quite remarkable how, you know, the majority of horses are you know, getting new riders in here, which is a little unusual. I suppose if I went and did some research about continuity in classic races, I think we'd be hard pressed to see, what is it, seven new riders on 10 horses.
Yeah.
Right? One.
Yeah. Two. It's, you know, ultimately all said and done. It's anticlimactic, isn't it?
Well, hope not. You know, maybe the race actually, you know, just the actual athletic competition on track alleviates. I don't know. It does seem, so that's something you and I didn't bring up and discuss yet, but it does seem that no matter what the outcome for Medina Spirit, particularly, it's going to, you know, there'll be a new round of outrage, win or lose. If he loses,
oh, yeah.
It's because
it's just going to be a new round of outrage if Medina Spirit wins or loses, and there's going to be a new round of outrage if Concertor wins. So you got three scenarios there, because you're going to have Baffert outrage. So you know, if that ends up happening, it's a new cycle of Baffert in the press. Not to mention, you know, all the speculation on social media and all the outrage, all warranted, by the way. You know, speculation, I don't care, but, you know, certainly outrage is all warranted. And, you know, circling back now, we started this with Joe. I used to always tell my players, you know, I coached all the way up through the 14, 15. I said, look, every time we play on the field, we're in New York. You know how the fans are, the other team's parents. They're going to yell at you. They're going to call your mother so-and-so. I said, you know, you just got to understand bad behavior, yes, but they're passionate. That's what they do. Just don't let it affect you. But understand the concept. That's what people do. Well, social media allows that to happen. In a greater echo too, and you know, I don't begrudge anybody lambasting any. Heck, I did it for 5 years against Trump.
point well taken.
Yeah.
Fair point. Sid, as always, thoughtful and invaluable insight from.
Thank you, Steve.
You know, from an industry, somebody committed to the game for a whole career. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. Talk to you next week.
You got it. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, Sid Fernando. Got to take one more break. This will be our last. We got the hour three, and we're going to get Blue. You got to hear from Blue. We're in Baltimore. There was the one year that he came striding through the door to my little office here that I broadcast from. And people, I started, I think I got the first pictures up on Monday, didn't I? Monday afternoon or evening? Steady supply of Jim McHugh and Jerry Fruchthoff photography. That I have access to here. That is one of my favorite parts of coming here. And it's amazing. And this is what, sixth, seventh, eighth year, at least, from this venue, from this office. And every time I find new things that had never come across before. And I'd love to. I've talked to Tom Law, and tomorrow we'll have Tom, who's the head of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters, about creating a historic preservation committee for digitizing the kind of materials, both written and visual, that are available, and especially in. Especially when it comes to venues, think about Rockingham and Suffolk and any venues that are gone, Hollywood, you hope that stuff has been materials like this, reams of photography, for instance, are being preserved. So somebody said, I hope this is being digitized. I'm digitizing it on my phone. I take a picture of the picture. So I sent out the one that I put up this morning is fabulous King Leatherberry with Roy Clark, if you haven't seen it. And Roy King trained for Roy Clark. Let's take a break. Blue's going to join us. We'll get you your crab cakes and we'll get you his unique insights. Seth Merrow to follow as well. Hour three at the races on this Wednesday from Pimlico.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
SiriusXM Sports presents